back to Head Games with Vinny Del Negro. Vinny, do you really think there are any other teams that can compete that really are close to the Suns and the Mavericks at this point?
Well, you have to put the Spurs in there. Whenever Tim Duncan's on the floor, they're always going to have an opportunity. Ginobili and Parker have to stay healthy. I don't think the Spurs are as deep as they've been in the past, but they definitely have the experience. They've won championships. They know what it takes. They will definitely be a tough, tough playoff team. But Dallas and San Antonio obviously are the two in the Western Conference that everyone talks about. But, you know, the Lakers, have played better than anyone expected. Their younger players are developing. Obviously, in Denver, you have Carmelo Anthony and Allen Iverson. They're going to start playing well together. They're two of the most explosive offensive players in the league. So the West is tough. Houston with McGrady and Yao Ming, when they're healthy, they're tough as well. So the list goes on and on. So there's not going to be any easy matchups in the playoff. You're going to have to go in there healthy and ready. But obviously Dallas and Phoenix getting most of the attention just because of the way they've played early in the season.
Do you think it's interesting that in all the leagues, one conference tends to dominate the other? I know the Suns are 17-1 against the East. The Eastern Conference, clearly the weaker conference. In the NFL, it's the National Conference. In Major League Baseball, it's the National League. Do you think there is a reason for that?
It's, you know, we talked about trends before. You know, before when the Bulls were winning championship, or the Pistons, or the Celtics, the list goes on. So it's just depending on trades and where players get drafted and, what deals are made and who's running the show on certain teams, and it all comes into a factor. But there's some great players, obviously, in the East. The Detroit Pistons have won a championship over there. The Miami Heat won the title last year. So maybe the depth isn't as strong from top to bottom, but teams are finding ways to win in seven-game series. Anything can happen. Players can get injured. Teams can get on a roll. You look at Dallas last year in the finals. They have a 3-0, big lead against the Heat. The Heat end up getting on a roll. Dwayne Wade goes crazy for a few games, and the Heat get the championship. So trends are tough. It'll go back and forth. But right now, from top to bottom, the Western Conference, obviously, the much better conference.
Vinny, you look at not only talent, you look at how it fits into a team, and that's what makes it interesting for me. The Nuggets, with AI there, they're averaging 116 now with him and Melo in the lineup. They've won five in a row, but they're also making J.R. Smith better. They're making Marcus Camby better. You talked about Marcus Camby before, so did Rick Bucher. I mean, last night, 10 points, but 5 block shots, 8 rebounds. Tell me about the effect of having one more player, just as the Suns have Amari Stoudemire back in the lineup, how that makes it easier and creates more opportunities for all the others.
Well, it's all about attention. You know, it's attention. You know, you have to give a lot of attention to Iverson, because one-on-one, you're not going to stop him, even sometimes double-teaming him. Same with Anthony. So the more talented players you put on the court, the more attention you have to give to those players. Now you put too much attention on Iverson. Anthony has single coverage on him, and he's going to make you pay for that. Marcus Camby is long and athletic. He kind of controls the paint for them. He's had some injury problems in the past, but when he's healthy, he's long, can shoot the ball a little bit from the perimeter, but he blocks shots, and he's big up front. So they have a nice balance there. J.R. Smith, a player that's going to get single coverage. They're going to run. They're going to get him in the open court. He's very athletic. He's young. He has excellent athletic ability, so he's going to get to the basket, and he's been shooting the three streaky, but he can make shots, so you have to respect that. So they're going to be a team that, obviously, when they get on a run, can give teams a lot of problems, because they have a lot of guys that have to be double-teamed, and when they play up the up-tempo style, it's hard to get control of that game. So they're going to be someone, obviously, that are going to be tough to deal with.
Okay, final question, and we'll start with the voice of someone you might recognize.
And the only thing you can really argue is the defense, because we are the number one offensive team. And there's some validity in their argument. But to say that our guys do not play defense, we laugh at it. It's not right. Statistically, it's not right. And you know what? To be compared to the Indianapolis Colts, that's a compliment. If we can do as well as they've done in the last few years, we'll take it.
That's, to me, a fun thing to say. Are the Suns in some ways treated like the Indianapolis Colts? They don't really have that run defense. They're not really respected, but they've got that fantastic offense. Let's look at it now, because you guys are playing tremendous basketball, but everybody's saying that it's Dallas that has the edge of defense.
Well, I mean, I think it's a fair comparison. There's no question about it. But, like Mike said, to be compared to a team that's going to the Super Bowl isn't a bad thing. So they got over the New England Patriots problems, and hopefully we can beat whoever we need to beat in the playoffs and get on a roll. I think our defense has improved this year. It's just that everyone looks at offensively, we're so powerful and put up 110 plus points a game, 131 last night. We can just score the basketball. There's no question about it. We're built that way, but we have to get better defensive. We have. Amari has improved defensively. Rebounding-wise, we have to get Kurt Thomas back in the lineup, get our rotations down. And it's a long season. A lot of adversity is thrown at you. It's how you handle that. We have great character guys, and I expect big things from this team. And we should be in the hunt, no question, to be in the finals and try to win a championship. But talking about it's easy, doing it is very tough. We will be well prepared if we can stay healthy, which we should be able to. And I like our chances, there's no question. But you have to get on a roll at the right time. Dallas has played well. I know of Avery Johnson as well as anybody playing with him in the backcourt for 6 years. He'll have them well prepared. They have gotten better defensively. Nowitzki and Nash will fight out for the MVP. And that's what it's all about. You have to compete at a high level, and I know our guys will be prepared.
Well, buddy, you were prepared. You may not have felt like you were prepared, but you're prepared for today. We appreciate it, Vinny. Continue your great work, and we'll check in with you in a week or two.
All right, buddy. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, my friend. All right, well, we're going to now travel. I want you all to visualize yourselves traveling across the Pacific Ocean thousands of miles to early morning in Australia. And we're joined by, as always this week and last week, Luke Jensen, IBM Advantage. Luke Jensen, are you awake still, buddy?
I'm doing great, buddy. I'm doing awesome. Getting ready for my run.
Hey, I like being your wake-up call. Well, Luke, last night, a tremendous surprise to me. Fernando Gonzalez played lights out, no inconsistency, straight sets against Rafael Nadal. He broke Nadal five times, 41 winners, which were almost triple Nadal's 14, 10 aces. That's 76 aces in five matches. That's even more than Andy Roddick. What's going on with this guy, and why haven't we heard more about him?
Well, he's been almost like a freak show in tennis because he has the biggest forehand in the game right now, clocked over 109 miles an hour. He never really had any structure both on the court during matches or on the practice court to maximize his ability. He's a gold medalist at the Athens Olympics in doubles. Very talented, lots of firepower, lots of speed. But the key recently is that even at his in his late 20s, mid to late 20s, he's decided to get even better. How can he maximize his talent, just like Andre Agassi did with his career? And so he hired one of the greatest coaches in the game right now, which is Larry Stefanke, who's coached a number of number ones in the world, from John McEnroe to Marcelo Rios, Yevgeny Kafelnikov. And the first thing the guy said, Larry Stefanke, is say, hey, we got to drop 10 pounds. And we have to start being more consistent, waiting for our opportunity. And even at this age, a player willing to accept another point of view and get after it. And that's exactly what he's done over the last 2 years, and he's playing much better for it.
Well, tell us about the match itself and what it was that Rafael Nadal was not able to do. Here's a guy that dominates his opponents. We talked about his physicality. We made the analogy he's sort of like the straight-ahead fullback. You know, he's a power runner. He's somebody that's going to knock you out, maybe more like a Deuce McAllister. But what happened in this game? If he was a Deuce McAllister,
Joe Frazier, another guy, straight-ahead guy, coming in, knocking blows. But one thing, when you have a big weapon that Fernando Gonzalez has, you have to use it at the right times. And when you look at this match, it was just fantastic. You break down the X's and O's. You know with Nadal, he's going to give you a hard, heavy topspin ball. He's going to move and compete really well. So you have to pick your spots. And I think when Gonzalez came out first, he believed he could win. If you don't step on the court and you don't believe you're the better player, if you don't believe you can win, you're in a huge hole just to start out. And so he first believed that he could win. So he comes out and was very consistent with his weaker shot, which was his backhand. He sliced it, he drove it, waited for his opportunities to hit the big forehand, and then he got more confidence as it went along, and he basically was throwing roundhouses. He was throwing knockouts on Nadal, and it never, never quit. From first ball to last ball, he was the better player.
Look, let me ask you, when you've got a weaker stroke, you talk about 109 mile an hour, flat out, destroyer forehand. So you know Nadal, the lefty against a righty, is going to be pounding that backhand. What do you do to protect your backhand? What do you do to not create more opportunities for your opponent when you know that he's going to be attacking your weak spot?
You change up the matchup. It's real simple. You know that he wants to drive the forehand to your backhand, and so you get out of that scenario as fast as possible. You'll take your backhand and then either slice it or hit it down the line to his backhand to try to change up the pattern. And the easy shot, the high percentage shot in tennis, is always to go cross court. It's over the low part of the net. It's a very high percentage shot, and it doesn't get you in trouble. But by going down the line, you're taking a little bit of a risk because you're going over the high part of the net. You're changing the direction of the ball, which is a lower percentage shot. But you have to get out of that scenario because if you go back cross court, eventually Nadal's going to go down, hit you, put you out of position, and then you're in trouble. So you have to change it up, and that's exactly what Gonzalez did. Ball would come into his backhand. He would get it right away down the line. Sampras used to do that to hide his backhand. A lot of players do that.
What happened with Nadal's injury? He actually called a medical timeout after the third game of the third set. Tell us about that and how he played when he came back.
Well, he had a hamstring issue, and he went in and had it taped up. And, you know, he's a fighter. He's a warrior. I mean, he didn't complain. He came back out, did the best he could. And to me, he was doing a lot of running. I don't think it really hurt him because he was getting beat up from first ball. He got beat up after the injury. He's the guy who relies so much on his wheels because he has to run so much. He's not your typical serve and volley, but he's an attacking baseliner that wins with his feet and wins with his heart. So I think in the end it didn't make a difference, but it was Gonzalez consistently staying mentally on the ball. He never dropped the ball, never let the number two seed back in the match.
Let me ask you this, because we talked about how much better Andy Roddick is playing, and I want to talk about that in the last segment and his match against Federer. But with Nadal also, you look at their physical abilities, their talent, but ultimately, as we talk about on the show, the name of the show itself in head games is sometimes they can find that edge. It sounds like Gonzalez found a mental edge with his new coach. What about Nadal? What kind of mental edge does he have with his coaching?
Well, I think he's got his Uncle Tony, you know, and Uncle Tony's pizza likes to keep it in the family. When you keep it in the family, you feel more confident, you believe in that they have your back, and when you have a good combination like that, it's very successful. And as long as it's keeping up at that standard, as long as he keeps staying at one or two in the world, I think Uncle Tony's pizza is going to be around for a while.
Yeah, but if it doesn't, look for a change in a year or so. When we come back, we're going to talk with Luke about the matchup coming up. Andy Roddick, a refreshed, renewed, excited, and effective Andy Roddick, a more overall game for him, coming up against Roger Federer, the maestro, the best player in the world, the Tiger Woods of tennis. We'll be right back on Head Games on Sports Byline Network and Sirius Channel 120.